And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton. Congress has removed the sunset provision that could have brought an end to a federal program that arranges pro bono legal assistance to people seeking protection from domestic violence threats. KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Guelo has more from Bethel.
Thursday, December 1st, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the POWER Act, which assures the continuation of programs offering free legal aid to domestic violence victims. Representative Mary Peltola's bill of the same title was the companion to this Senate bill in the House. The bill has now gained final passage in Congress.
Some people call it domestic violence, but I think that we really should call it intimate partner-related violence, because sometimes it's somebody you're dating.
Peltola says that victims are too often unable to escape the perpetrators of their trauma, to devastating effect.
So often there aren't resources for people who are on the receiving end of partner-related violence or intimidation, and they don't have the legal resources to help them navigate ways to keep that person away, their perpetrator away from them.
This legislation removes the sunset provision from earlier legislation, the 2018 Pro Bono Work to Empower and Represent Act, sponsored by Senators Dan Sullivan and Gene Shaheen, authorizing a pilot project calling for each district court to hold at least one event annually in concert with domestic violence service providers to promote pro bono legal services for partner-related violence and intimidation cases. Additionally, to address the appalling victimization rates among Alaska Natives and American Indians in particular, the bill pushes partnerships between district courts, tribes, and tribal organizations.
Certainly, this is really, really prevalent among Alaska Natives, this partner-related violence. So the other really great thing about this is that the bill also encourages and mandates partnerships between district courts and tribes and tribal organizations. So I think this is a really important step in the right direction.
Since its enactment, the POWER Act has brought together service organizations and lawyers with the goal of combating high rates of violence and intimidation endemic across the United States. Representative Mary Peltola wants to help more people find these resources and communicate with young people about healthy relationships and how to safely get out of unhealthy relationships. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez-Cuello.
Temperatures in Ukiagvik broke 40 degrees on Monday. That's the highest ever recorded for the North Slope community in December. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports the unusual warm spell is at least in part due to climate change-driven loss of sea ice.
This time of year, Billy Adams would expect to see sea ice lining Utqiagvik's Chukchi Sea shoreline. But right now, it's all open water.
It was raining before Thanksgiving. Then it rained again, and it's December.
Adams lives in Utqiagvik and is an observer for the Alaska Arctic Observatory and Knowledge Hub, a coalition of northern communities that shares data about sea ice, wildlife, and coastal waters. Adams says this year there's no ice along the shore, and there's been a lot of snow and even rain in town.
You know, in the past years, it seems like it lasts only for a week. Then it was back to cold, but the last few months has been very unusually warm.
Temperatures in Utqiagvik broke 40 degrees on Monday, the highest ever recorded for the North Slope community in December. The unusual warm spell was driven in part by climate change, says climatologist Rick Toman with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy.
The open water at this point, the first week in December, in the Chukchi Sea, that is a very clear climate change signal there.
Toman says the latest jump in temperatures stems from a combination of warm air and rain moving north from the Bering Sea, plus the lack of Arctic sea ice.
That exposed water is basically acting as a heating pad, putting out that heat into the polar atmosphere.
Toman says the North Slope has seen progressively warmer winters in recent years, in part due to rapidly disappearing sea ice. High temperatures ranged in the upper 30s and low 40s across the North Slope Monday. Adams from Utqiagvik says he's concerned about what the spike could mean for caribou, an important subsistence animal. Warm weather tends to bring lots of snow, which he says makes it difficult for caribou to find food in the tundra.
We have to keep an eye out in the next few weeks, the next few months. And, you know, we hope to see that animals are still around.
A NOAA weather forecast shows temperatures in Ukiakvik are expected to drop into the teens and single digits by the end of the week. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
Lisa Fu has been a journalist in Alaska for years, covering local issues and statewide politics, but now she's taking on a family story, her own. Her mother, Lan Fu, fled Cambodia during the Khmer Rouge regime in the 1970s before coming to the United States before Lisa was born. Fu said that there are a lot of parts of the story she didn't know, and she had asked for years to interview her mom. She sat down with KTOO's Yvonne Quemre to talk about what it's been like making the series.
Hey, Lisa, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Is there anything that you wish people in Juneau and Alaska understood about the history of the Khmer Rouge?
A lot of people, most people are familiar with the Vietnam War. So I think this is just a piece of our history that a lot of people just aren't familiar with. So I think just like telling that story that's been so important to my life and letting folks know, like, this was going on at the same time, right? It's just, there was so much going on in that region. So I think it's just a piece of history that people should know about.
In the first episode, your mother tells you the story of how your older sister was killed. And she said something that really stuck with me. I'll play it.
Oh, it took me so long to able to repeat the story.
How did you feel asking her about these traumatic memories as part of this project?
I mean, I think on one hand, I wanted to know them. So like on a very basic level, I wanted like a record of what happened in her life. It was important like for me to know because I never heard that story. I had asked my mom over years if I could interview her, and she said no. Like, she said no many times. And then I forget what year it was, like 2014 or 15. She got in a car accident and she was fine. But it was just like, oh, my gosh, you know, like this is like, you know, we could lose anyone at any moment. So I was like, Mom, can I interview you, please? And she finally said yes. So like I felt okay because she had obviously thought about it, right? And she was ready to share with me.
And you said you've been working on the story for 6 years. Can you talk about why you wanted to do it and how it took to come to fruition? Like, how come 6 years?
I had asked my mom after this car accident, can I interview you? After many times, she finally said yes. And just feasibly, she came to visit me when my daughter was born. So that was just like the longest time we were in the same location together. So just logistically, it made sense that I would interview her then. But I, as far as like why I wanted to do it, I think in my mind growing up, like I always assumed I would tell her story one day or my family story. But yeah, so I interviewed her, just like the process of transcribing everything and like writing, everything just takes a super long time to do. Life gets in the way. But yeah, I mean, it just took a long, long time.
You've been a reporter in Alaska for years. How has that experience prepared you for this project?
I think it should have prepared me better. You know, I had been an audio reporter, a public radio reporter, and so I know how to like handle a mic and how to like where to put it and stuff. But when I interviewed my mom, it was like, I can't put this mic in her face. Like, there's just no way I can do that. Because on one hand, I wanted to make her feel comfortable, but just it was like I couldn't be the reporter with my mom.
Has hearing more about your mother's story changed the way you see your work as a reporter at all?
You know, like what I liked about this, doing this work is just like the in-depth nature to it. What's been really interesting is that I have also been doing another podcast called Private Right, which is a series about abortion in Alaska. And it's really intense to like kind of toggle between both of these stories. You know, at the root of it is like motherhood. Like, there's just like, you know, and I'm a mother and I'm struggling just every day with being a mom and being a reporter and then telling my mom's story and then reporting on people having the choice or not to have the choice to be a parent. There's just like a lot of intersectionality to the work I'm doing with both podcasts that makes me pause often. And I'm just like, whoa, you know?
Okay, thank you so much for stopping by and talking to me about this.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're expecting rain overnight in Juneau, up to about a half an inch. For those of you keeping track, that will definitely push 2022 into first place for Juneau's wettest year. We're about a tenth of an inch short right now. Low tonight, around 35 degrees. Rain again tomorrow with a high near 39. There's cooler weather and snow in the forecast for the weekend.